So welcome, welcome everyone. This is the second in our series of Works Mental, the nature of workplace wellbeing, to celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month and specifically week this week. So happy Mental Health Awareness Week. I'm Amy from Head Torch, for those of you that haven't met me before.
I'm Angus from Head Torch.
And our fantastic guest today is the one and only Jeff McDonald, who I'll introduce more fully shortly. Just to say that if you don't know Head Torch, you haven't come across us before, we do all things to create mentally healthy workplaces. So we work with senior teams, managers, frontline people, enabling people to be proactive in terms of supporting their mental health and well-being at work. And we work with a wide range of organisations, public, private, large, small. It doesn't matter. It's relevant for each and every one of us, as I'm sure you know. Really delighted to have Jeff McDonald with us here today. For those of you that don't know Jeff, he is the most amazing person who was former global VP HR at Unilever, and since then he has gone on to become a global campaigner and speaker in the support of mental health and well-being at work, and a co-founder of the ever-growing organisation Minds at Work in London, and a senior advisor. We are very blessed. He's a senior advisor with us. So Jeff, did you manage to bring along any kind of object that you could share with us that says something about you? Or is there something around you right now you can grab?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Amy just, if it wasn't for Amy, I wouldn't get everything right. She reminds me right to the last minute of what to do. And I promise you, I've brought something, Amy. So there you go. And I'm sure Angus is not surprised.
That's great, Jeff.
The object is a bicycle. And the reason it's a bicycle is because I just love my mountain biking. I love to get out into nature two or three times a week on my mountain bike and just connect with nature. And it's such an important driver of my overall well-being, having that time out in nature, also with a bunch of friends. And that's all about connection and connecting with others. That social connection together with the connection to nature, really, really important for my overall well-being.
Fantastic. And you've been cycling for a long time, right?
Well, yeah. I used to ride to school as a little boy of about 10 years of age. I used to get on the bike and ride to school in the good old South African days when we could just go and do that.
Yeah. And I remember also a few years ago when we worked together with you with Minds at Work, and we put on the This Is My Story event at RBS in Edinburgh. And you had just cycled with your pals all the way from Land's End to John O'Groats, right?
Yeah, we had a wonderful 7 days on the bicycle riding from Land's End to John O'Groats.
And you got attacked or something somewhere around Glasgow, is that right?
I was warned about Glasgow. Well, guess what? It really did live up to the stereotype that is associated with Glasgow.
Oh, come on. Friendliest place in the world.
But you raised lots of money for a mental health charity, I believe.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was wonderful. Wonderful.
Fantastic. Great. Well, we are going to hear from Jeff now. He's going to you're going to speak to us for around about just up to 15 minutes max tops, if you would, Jeff. And then he's going to pose us a question. And then we are going to go into breakout rooms. So if you are in your gym jams, you know, you might want to think about that. We're going to go into breakout rooms to have a chat about Jeff's question. And then we're all going to come back together and we can share some of our thoughts, and you can ask Jeff any which question that you like. So without any further ado, over to you, Jeff.
So Amy, will you tell me when I've got like 5 minutes to go? I've got my clock here, but you know what I'm like. I mean, I could talk the whole afternoon with you guys. So you're going to have to shut me up at some point.
My pleasure.
Cool. So maybe where I should start is get everybody to just reflect on a question. And I think it was Mark Twain who once said, the two most important days in your life, what are they? Now, most people, when I ask that question in talks that I do all around the world, 99.9% of the time, the response I get is the two most important days in your life is the day you were born and the day you die. And then I always reflect on what is it about the human species that we're so pessimistic about life. We can't wait for the second most important day in our life. Just let me be born, stick me in an incubator, switch the machines off and let me die. And it'll be such an important day. But what Mark Twain said is he said the two most important days in our life is the day we were born and the day we find out why we were born. Why? Why? And my why is a very simple one. It's to try and create workplaces all over the world where people in those workplaces feel that they genuinely, genuinely have the choice to put their hand up and to ask for some help if they are struggling with a common form of mental ill health. There should not be one workplace, one family, one friendship group anywhere in the world that if you were struggling from a common form of mental ill health, depression, anxiety, bipolar, there should not be one workplace where you don't feel genuinely, genuinely safe to put your hand up and ask for some help. And you know what? I don't think that's a very audacious purpose, and I don't think it's a very noble purpose. You know why? Because in every workplace, in every family group, in every friendship group, if you had a common physical illness, you'd put your hand up and ask for some help. Why in the 21st century do we still have families, friendship groups, and workplaces all over the world where people feel ashamed, fearful, embarrassed to talk about or ask for some help if they're struggling mentally or emotionally? Why? When all of us on this call are mental, including me, we're all mental, we're all physical, we're all emotional, and we've probably all got a sense of being spiritual. Yet, we have a world where all I can talk about is my physical health. And when it's not good, I can talk about it if it's a common physical ailment. But I can't talk about a common mental ailment like depression. You know how common it is. And you might say to me, well, Jeff, why are you so passionate about trying to create that sort of world? And the reason I'm so passionate about it is because back in 2008, I was diagnosed with anxiety-fueled depression. Me, depression. You know what my understanding of the word depression was before I was diagnosed? I'd wake up on a Saturday morning and I'd want to go for a bike ride with my mates and it's pouring with rain and I'd turn to my wife and say, I'm depressed. She'd say, why? I'd say, because it's raining outside. Or when Unilever first moved me to the UK, I'd been here for about a year and around January time, people used to talk to me about a thing called SAD. Seasonal effects disorder. And I used to say, explain, what's that? And they say, no, the weather can influence your mood. I remember I used to think to myself, what a load of crap. The weather influence your mood. Man up, you snowflake. And back in 2008, my daughter's 13th birthday, by the way, I was diagnosed with anxiety-fueled depression. After leaving the doctor's rooms that day, I made a decision that saved my life, and that was not to be burdened by the stigma that is associated with the illness. And you know why it saved my life? I had to take 3 months off work. I had dark, dark moments. The reason it saved my life is because it liberated me and allowed me to tell my family, my friends, and some of my close colleagues at work what was wrong. Do you know what I got back from them in my darkest moments? Do you know what I felt from every single one of them in my darkest, darkest moments? Was the most wonderful outpouring of the most powerful emotion in the world. It's called love. And you know, in my darkest moments, just knowing that I was loved by my line manager, by my friends, by my daughter, by my wife, that sense of feeling loved is what kept me going, together with a sense of hope. I used to meet with a colleague every 10 days who 2 years prior to my illness had been so sick that he'd been admitted to the Priory. And I used to meet with Martin and I saw he was better. He gave me that tiny, tiny bit of light at the end of the tunnel, that sense of hope that I could get through this. How many songs have been sung about the power of love? Jennifer Rush. And do you know what? When I hear that song, I get goosebumps all over my body. Because just that feeling of being loved is what kept me going. And yes, I got better over a three-month period. I had to take 3 months off work. I was doing a very senior job in Unilever at the time. I went back to work 2010. I had a bit of a relapse. And then in October of 2012, I lost a very good friend to suicide. And the night he died, I lay in bed and I came to two very simple conclusions. The first conclusion I came to was here I was in 2012, flourishing in many ways, recovering every single day, learning to recover every single day as somebody who is susceptible to anxiety, fuel, depression, and my friend is gone. What's the difference? And the difference was I'd been able to have a conversation. I'd been able to ask for some help. He couldn't. He was an alpha male, Afrikaner, South African. There is no ways he could talk about his mental and emotional struggles. And instead, he killed himself. And I lay there and I thought, that's not fair. That's not fair. Stigma has just killed my friend. Because I knew that had he had a physical illness, what would he have done? He would have gone and asked for some help. But because he was struggling mentally and emotionally, he didn't think he could do so. And I lay there and I thought, that is not fair. Not in the 21st century. Not in a century when we put men and women on the moon and we bring them back safely. When Elon Musk is going to stick us into Mars. How can we not be talking about our mental and emotional ill health when we need to in the 21st century? It's part of who we are. It's part of our uniqueness, who we are mentally and emotionally. And so that night, I decided I have to do something about this. I wrote to Alistair Campbell that night, completely out of the blue, didn't know him from a bar or soap. Within 10 minutes, I had a response from Alistair. A week later, we met up in Belsize Park. And ever since that day, he opened some doors for me, which has allowed me to take some tiny, tiny footsteps on a journey filled with a deep sense of purpose. And that is to create workplaces all over the world, families, friendship groups, where people feel they can genuinely just put their hand up and ask for some help. I led a piece of work in Unilever for a year and a half around breaking stigma. I then left Unilever and I went out into the world to follow this life filled with a deep, deep sense of purpose. And you know, as I've journeyed that path, and by the way, before I tell you the biggest insight I've had on that journey, I'm not saying to any of you today that had my friend been able to have a conversation, he'd still be alive today. I'm not saying that for 1 minute. But what I am saying is, had he been able to have a conversation, just one, there's a tiny chance. Think of a grain of sand. There's a tiny, tiny chance he'd be alive today. Tiny chance. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, to give every single person who is struggling in silence right now, and there are billions of them all over the world, to give every one of them that tiny chance to have one conversation, that's worth fighting for the rest of my life. It is worth fighting for every single day to give those people that tiny chance. And as I've journeyed my path over the last 8 years, one of the things that I've really noticed is that the most powerful driver or the most limiting resource in workplaces today is the energy of their people. People are frazzled. People are frazzled. They can't wait for a Friday afternoon and they detest a Monday morning. And you know what I would argue? That energy is the most important driver of individual, team, and organizational performance. You know what it's like to work for somebody who brings energy, who radiates energy. If you're recruiting and you get down to two candidates, they've got the same credentials, you probably go with the candidate that's going to bring the right energy, is going to bring the right attitude, is going to be passionate. You want to work with those people. It's the most important driver of our performance as individuals. I often used to say in HR, people are our most important asset. No, the energy of our people is the most important asset. The energy of our people. And you know where we get our energy from? We get our energy from our well-being, from our health. By being physically healthy, emotionally healthy, mentally healthy, and having that sense of purpose and meaning in our lives. And so then my challenge to organizations today is, if the well-being of your people is such a critical enabler of performance at an individual level, at a team level, and at an organizational level, why is it not a strategic priority in your business? Why is it not a strategic priority? Because I bet you every other strategic priority, every other strategic priority is about enabling the performance of the business. Well, then why isn't the most important enabler of individual and team performance, energy, health, well-being, why is it not a strategic priority? Because it's a performance enabler. Explain to me, why not? And then I like to challenge to say, if it were a strategic priority, what would it look like? And I think there are three ingredients to success. Because I think most well-being initiatives that I see in organizations today are just tick box exercises. We have a week called the Well-Being Week. We care for you 1 week of the year, and then the other 51 weeks of the year, we flog you to death. Or we care for your mental health. We do lots in Mental Health Awareness Week, and then the rest of the year, we couldn't be cared about your mental health. Or we have a few bananas next to the till in the canteen. Why do these well-being initiatives not truly stick in organizations? And I think there are three things missing. The first is it's not seen to be a strategic initiative. And therefore, it doesn't get the financial and human resource behind it to make it successful. So it's not a strategic priority. The second reason that they don't stick is there's no organization accountability to keep people healthy. There is no organization accountability to enhance the well-being of people. I often say we spend billions in health and safety. Guess what? It all goes to safety. It doesn't go to health. It goes to keeping people physically safe at work. We spend billions in health and safety. Well, it all goes to safety. And whenever I get a pamphlet from somebody in an organization that says, as I go in, they say, please, before you go in, read our health and safety pamphlet. And then I read it, and then I give it back to them, and I say, please remove the word health, because there's nothing in this about what you're doing to enhance the well-being and the health of your people. You're keeping them physically safe, yes. So there's no organization accountability to enhance people's health. Why? It's the most important driver of their performance. By the way, COVID has proved it. When the world's population is not healthy, look what happens. Industries disappear. And the third reason it doesn't stick is there's no individual accountability whatsoever. We don't encourage people to enhance their health as a driver of their performance. We don't encourage people to enhance their well-being as a driver of their performance. And so when we have the Well-Being Week and Amy comes to do a talk on mental health, we expect 100 people are going to arrive, 20 arrive. Oh, by the way, we've invested all these resources, we've done all this training, we've got all this stuff in our organization, nobody uses it. Why? Because there's no individual accountability. And my vision one day is that we have individual accountability by having development plans. When we talk about the development of our people, we don't just talk about their skills, their knowledge, their experience, their career. We also talk to them about the most important enabler of their performance, their well-being. And we work together with them to create a plan, a future fit plan. Just like they've got a skills development plan, or they might have a coach to help them with some of their behaviors, they're also going to have a future fit plan, a well-being plan. Why? Because without their well-being, they can have all the skills, all the knowledge, all the experience, all the behaviors. But if they're not healthy, they can't perform. And so I think we should change the performance management equation in organizations. And I think performance should equal knowledge plus skill plus experience plus behavior multiplied by well-being, multiplied by energy. Because if well-being is zero, P is zero. When I was at Unilever, when I was really sick, I had all the skills, I had all the knowledge, I had all the experience, and I had all of the right behaviors. You know what I didn't have? I didn't have my well-being. I couldn't perform. I could not perform. And so that's my provocation to you today. That's my provocation to you. Where is the health of your people in the list of priorities in your workplaces? And if it is such an enabler to performance, why is it not a strategic priority? And if it were a strategic priority, what would that look like? We would have the financial and human resource invested behind it. We would take organization accountability to enhance the health of our people. And we would also, through development conversations with our people, encourage them to value the most valuable asset that they have, their well-being. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Jeff. Wow. You just take my breath away every time. It's emotional. So we're going to go into breakout groups now. And this is Jeff's question for us. What is getting in the way of well-being being a strategic priority in workplaces? Photograph the screen, write it down, do what you need to do to capture that question. There's going to be approximately four people in your breakout group. Please do switch your camera on if you have that, if you have access to that, and switch your sound on so that you can benefit most from your discussion. And we'll come back together in approximately 15 minutes. And it'd be lovely if you'd like to share some thoughts. And of course, if you've got any specific questions for Jeff as well, that's the time to then share them. So thank you very much again, Jeff. Okay, so we are going to open the floor now for, to share some of your thoughts and to, if you want, if you've got any specific questions for Jeff as well, now is the time. Now, because we're a nice jolly bunch, which is great, if you wouldn't mind using one of the hands up, you'll find it top of your screen, one, two, three along, you'll see a little hands up. If you click that, then we'll know that you're wanting to say something or you're wanting to share something from your group.
Amy, do you want to stop the screen share?
Okay, I can do that. Is that better?
There we go.
Great. Yeah. Thanks. Mr. Jeff.
What's that?
Somebody's having a conversation.
Do you want to mute everybody, Amy, and then we can unmute the people that's
a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. So Malcolm Crosby, yes, you've got your hand up.
Well, it's hard to say, in our meeting, our breakout room, there was supposed to three of us, but only one person could hear. I don't know what happened to the third person. I don't know whether they could hear what we were talking about or not. So we only had a discussion between two of us. I don't know what happened to I thought there was supposed to be four people. But in terms of, responding to the question, the discussion that we had talked about workloads and pressures to deliver and that sort of thing. As being what leads to it. And I would say from interest, I'm a union rep within what used to be the Forestry Commission, now Forestry Land Scotland. We are constantly making representations to management about doing strategic thinking in order to reduce the workload pressures on some of our staff. Obviously during COVID, people have been working from home and there's been a huge amount of work done on trying to ensure that people were looked after, shall we say, kept in touch with. But also in advance of a staff council shortly, just had some statistics from the organisation which show how much they've spent on mental health absence. And if that doesn't give us a lever to be able to do something about it, then I don't know what is. So I'm looking forward to our next meeting in June. But certainly the person I was talking to was sharing experiences of working in the private sector, mental health as being a prime driver in and other health issues to make sure that people could work safely. Talking about the previous wartime experience of many people making them unsympathetic to, taking action, counselling, things like that.
Yeah, thank you, Malcolm. Thanks, I think Malcolm. We need to stop thank you there.
You. Yeah, just pause you there, I might. Jeff, do you want to comment on anything that Malcolm's raised there?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind just making a general comment for everybody because it came up in our little discussion group. And I think, I didn't have enough time to actually flesh out what could this look like. Can I put a slide up? Because I think it might just, there was quite a few questions that was, we've got it as a strategic priority, but we don't really know what we should be executing or doing.
Yeah.
So could I just put up a framework that I've developed?
On you go, Jeff.
If you can,
Okay, there we go. It's going up.
Okay.
Guys, so ladies and gentlemen, this is something that I've developed in terms of, you know, what is it that you should, would you go and do? And remember, if it's a strategic priority, it'll take time to execute. All strategic priorities are like that. You put the financial and human investment behind it, and it takes time to execute these things. That was my experience, 25 years working in Unilever, all right? They take time. So what would it look like? The first thing that it would look like is that the organization has defined for themselves their well-being framework. Now, I use the Warwick Edinburgh well-being framework, which is the little triangle in the middle of the circle. That means we must be providing resources to our people that will enhance their physical health, their emotional health, their mental health, and have we defined the purpose for our organization? So the first thing you would do is you would define the well-being framework, and then you would do a bit of a gap analysis and look at the different elements of your framework and what resources are you currently offering your people, what's missing, and fill those gaps. That's the first thing we would do. And I'm not saying this in any particular chronological order. I think that second thing that would be so important to be doing is that you have to address the stigma of mental ill health. Because if people are going to be able to talk about in their development conversations with their line manager about their well-being, they've got to feel safe to talk about their emotional and mental health. And so you would have to, I reckon, a year addressing the stigma of mental ill health, training all your people, everybody in the organization, around mental health and what is mental health, what are the signs, the symptoms, how do I have conversations as a line manager? You know, people are fearful about talking this stuff. We've got to educate and teach people. So you'd have a whole training program that would go in to address the stigma of mental ill health. That's the second thing. The third thing you would think about doing is review your leadership competency model and insert a competency which is all about compassion. I have not seen any leadership competency models anywhere in the world where we expect leaders to show compassion. But you know, since COVID, Gallup have just done some research and they've asked followers, what are they looking for from their leaders today? And you know what they're looking for from their leaders? Four things. They want leaders who instill trust. They want leaders who instill stability. They want leaders who instill hope. And they want leaders who instill compassion. Compassion. And so we should be expecting every leader to behave in a way which shows compassion. And it's part of measuring their performance, what they've delivered and how they've delivered. So you'd relook your leadership development model. And then finally, some of you in my little group were talking about this. You have to, you know why we get safety right? Because we got measures in place. We treasure what we measure. We treasure what we measure. And you know what? We now can do a survey of the well-being of your organization. So just like you do engagement surveys, we should also do well-being surveys. And coming out of that survey will highlight some of the ways of working that you need to address. Like the individual who just spoke earlier, there are ways of working in the organization that have to also be addressed. I often say that if the flower doesn't bloom, there's nothing wrong with the flower. It's the environment it lives in most cases. If you don't fertilize it, if you don't give it a bit of water, it will not bloom. And so doing a well-being survey, seeing what are some of the ways of working that have to change, and you would then begin to address those ways of working through changes to policies, processes, and systems. But it would come out of a survey. And I think in some ways, I think we should stop doing engagement surveys because they measure people's willingness to go the extra mile, the pride in the organization. What they don't measure are people's ableness to go the extra mile, their ableness. Are they healthy enough to go the extra mile? So it's not just about being willing to go the extra mile. Have you got the energy and the well-being to go the extra mile? So that's what I think the organization would do. And then finally, I think when it comes to your performance management equation in your organization, I'm just going to put this slide up. I think we should change the performance management equation in a slide, I mean, in an organization. And we should say performance equals knowledge, skill, behavior, experience, multiplied by the most powerful driver of your performance, your well-being. Because if your well-being is zero, P is zero. So I think we need a complete relook at how we see the performance. What are the drivers of performance in an organization? And health is a critical driver of performance. It's a critical driver of performance. And so therefore, in order to drive individual accountability in the organization, we should start having development plans. Just, you don't have a skills development plan only or a coach to help you with your behavior. Everybody in the organization should have a future fit plan, a well-being plan. Because if the company's invested resources in all of those things that I've just took, they've done a well-being survey, they've changed ways of working, they've put resources against the framework, they've addressed the stigma of mental ill health, then people must use those resources and they must be held accountable for using the resources as part of their development, their growth in the organization. Imagine an employee value proposition which says, come and work for us. You know why? Because we'll enhance your life. I can tell you most workplaces I go into, people's lives are diminished by going to work, not enhanced. What a differentiator. If you could talk about, come and work for us because we are going to enhance your life by coming to work here. Part of your development is about your health and your well-being.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jay. Fantastic. And that chimes in actually with...
Give people a bit of practical things that they could think about actually going away and executing over time, Amy.
Definitely. And I was just going to say, we have our Head Torch Index now, which does exactly that. It gives people a measurement of where they are as a culture. So it taps into, you know, what is senior management doing? What are management doing? What are frontline staff doing? And it's a real excellent way for people to get, for an organization to understand, okay, this is where we are now. Here are the gaps. And how are we going to fill that as we move forward? What are we going to do about it? How do we start that from day one? And one of the things we talked about in our group, because it doesn't need to all cost money. One of the things we talked about in our group is the simple thing of having mental health and well-being on your agenda at every meeting. Yeah, it's part of the way your organization works. Imagine if it was on the agenda of every meeting, that was how it started, that was where the conversation started. What a difference that would make in terms of people's ability to open up and start just talking about it on a regular basis. And then when people are unwell, they feel that much more comfortable to open up themselves.
Do you know, Amy, sometimes what I find, one of the biggest barriers to these well-being surveys is that senior managers don't want to see the results. Mm. They are fearful. They are fearful of seeing the levels of well-being and stress in their organization. And then what they're worried about is they don't know what to do about it. And, you know, sometimes that's where you need an external catalyst, somebody from outside the organization to come in and to provoke, but also hopefully to inspire that leadership team to see how important this is. Because sometimes that was my lifesaver in Unilever. I brought Alistair Campbell to come in and stick a bloody cracker up people's bum. And in he came and he did it. And you know what? It made a huge, huge difference because Alistair was able to say things to that executive team that I couldn't say. And so sometimes bringing that external perspective, I think, can be hugely powerful. And then reassuring that senior leadership group that there is a roadmap here. These are some of the things you can do and you can get better.
Yeah.
And also, Sorry, Jeff. We have a question there from Lynn, who's at Western Isles Council. And she's asking, I'd be interested to know what training you would suggest for line managers and what management tools. Well, obviously, first of all, there's our training for line managers and there is also our index. But what do you think, Jeff?
Well, training on what, Angus? What
line manager training specifically?
Well, I think there's manager training that's going to be required for all aspects of the well-being framework.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. You know, I use that Warwick Edinburgh framework. Now, your emotional well-being is driven by two things: your financial security and your relationships. And so I think we should be giving training to people around how to manage their finances as part of the training in an organization. I think we should be giving training to people how to maintain positive relationships with one another in an organization. Yes, we've got to have conflict. Yes, we've got to have tough decisions, but tough conversations. But how do we come out of that conversation feeling that the relationship is still intact? Yes, we've got to do training for line managers around mental health and how to have conversations around mental ill health, how to spot the signs, how to spot the symptoms. Yes, we've got to teach line managers in the future how to have a well-being conversation with their people. How do you go about having that well-being conversation? And somebody in my group, Angus, said, no, but health is a personal thing. I'm sorry, it's not a personal, it's not anymore. Work impacts your health. Organizations should be held accountable for the health of their people because it diminishes people's lives. And if you don't believe me, read Jeffrey Pfeffer's book, Dying for the Paycheck. He's done all the longitudinal research around the world. Workplaces are damaging people's health, and they've got to take accountability. They've got to take accountability. And so you can't say, oh, the health of the person is a person. It's not. That workplace is impacting their health. And so therefore, they need to show a duty of care,
100% agree.
Lots of training, I think, Angus, lots of different. But I think you'd work that out. Once you clear on your well-being framework, what are the resources we need to put in place? What sort of training are we going to need to give to our managers such that we can execute this like we would any other strategic priority?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Have we got any other questions we could? Well, actually, we probably don't have time for any more, unfortunately. Wow, we could, though, couldn't we? We could talk on and on. It's such such an important subject and so well delivered and put across by you, Jeff. So, you know, can't thank you enough for your participation and your time here today. I know you are very busy through this time. Hang on, there we go. I couldn't see anyone, which is a bit scary. So I'd just like to say a huge, huge thank you to Jeff. As I said, it's very, very busy time at the moment, and especially when you've been sitting in a hotel room for 10 days, you poor thing. So thank you so much again. It's been an absolute delight and a pleasure. I hope everybody here has lots of food for thought, and we'll take that away and think about it and start putting stuff into practice. Angus.
Yeah, so please, if you like what you saw today, please follow us on LinkedIn and things like this. Keep an eye out for future events. We are doing more all the way through May. We would love to work with anybody, any organizations that need help in these areas. Get in touch with us. Give us a shout.
Absolutely. Next week, we have the fabulous Alison Smith, who's actually here with us today as well. She's an author, speaker, coach, and we are fortunate to have her as one of our associates as well. And she's going to be focusing on a poem, actually, that she has written, and we'll all have a chance to see that poem and go through that poem. She'll take us through it as we focus on how we get from where we are to where we want to be for our well-being. And again, there'll be some breakout discussions for us to explore how the poem resonates with us. So I know it will be a really fascinating and stimulating session again next week. So do tune in, same link, same time, for just 1 hour. We actually have a few minutes left. We're fortunate. So has anybody got any other questions or comments that have arisen from today's event?
There's a couple of questions there about recordings. Yes. This is recorded and it will be going out this afternoon, and also last week's will be posted too. Any other questions?
Anyone for anyone? No. Okay. Well, listen, thank you. Thank you very much again, Jeff. Thank you, everyone, for coming along today. It's been really fantastic. So thanks very much, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your Mental Health Awareness Week. Woo!
Okay. Cheers, everybody. Bye. Great to see you all.